All right, it's a Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On this week's episode, Allison Roman, author of Dining In, Highly Cookable Recipes. Allison used to work at BA. She was in our test kitchen for like 4 years. Now she's a contributor to the magazine. And what I loved about Allison then and still do now is that she cooks her way. You see an Allison dish and you're like, oh, that dish is so Roman. Her recipes are very much who she is. And that's a unique skill and it makes for an amazing cookbook and an amazing contributor to BA. So I sat down with Allison. But you know what? I didn't sit down with her in the Condé Nast studios. We recorded this segment at the super swank new Sonos store in Soho. You know Sonos. You hear them on our ad breaks all the time. And so they invited us over and they had this cool glassed-in studio and like this wall of speakers and this amazing photo display of cool old punk rock guys and everything. So Alice and I met up there and we recorded this cast. All right, let's do this thing. Allison, you wrote a cookbook.
Hi, Adam. I did write a cookbook. Yes.
Harder than you thought, easier than you thought, or about what you thought?
Much harder than I thought. Yeah. Really? Mostly emotionally, not the physical labor, but the
what does that mean? Emotionally how?
Well, I mean, the whole process is so isolating, right? I think also comparatively, so coming from the magazine where you have a team of people that are always weighing in on your ideas and your dishes and what they look like and how they fit onto a page and the concept
whether you want them to weigh in or not.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no fewer than like 18 people giving you an opinion. And when you're writing a book, you're by yourself and it's you and your laptop. And in my case, my cat, and we're sitting there and it's kind of like, well, I hope this is good. And of course, my editor was great. But even still then, it's just two people.
Yeah. My wife, who you know a bit, Simone, she's an artist. And that's one of the things that she always says. It's like, dude, like you're by yourself mm-hmm. in your studio all day.
Yeah.
And like you have nowhere to go and nothing to escape your own head.
Yeah. There were a few points where that was much harder than the physical act of developing recipes, which I'm very comfortable with and can do. And that was sort of the easiest part. Like I know what I like a plate of food to look like and taste like and how easy it is to execute for the home cook. That stuff is the easy part. It's everything else, you know, is this recipe challenging enough? Is it simple enough? Is it trendy enough, but also timeless enough? And you're kind of trying to hit the middle of every single sweet spot.
Exactly. What makes a recipe feel now? What makes it feel new, but not too new?
Yeah.
And makes it work accessible, but not too easy.
Yeah.
Typically, so when you worked at Bon Appetit and the painted the picture of the test kitchen in the World Trade Center is a big room with open windows overlooking the Oculus and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you have four or five test kitchen editors in there cooking.
You've got espresso machine.
Yes, an espresso machine. You have guys like Camille Stonick just wandering down to just nibble and chat. Mm-hmm. So you had no shortage of people to sort of bounce ideas off of. But while writing the book, who are the people you would get on the phone or would you email some or... You know, who are those sort of sounding boards?
Well, I mean, you have so much food that you're cooking that you have to have people over. You mm-hmm. have to say, hey, Sunday, what are you guys doing? Come over. I don't care what time you come over from this hour to this hour.
It's weird. I didn't get that email. I don't know.
You know, maybe. It was a select group of people. Mm. They were screened beforehand, you know, vigorous.
You want to just regular people
yeah,
who are not
you know
too refined.
Too much, Adam.
Yeah,
exactly, you know too much.
Mm, okay.
I needed the everyman. Your clothes are too nice. It's just, it's too much. But yeah, so having friends, some in the industry, some not, to kind of weigh in and.
So weigh in after recipes were developed, not while you
testing. And there were a few that I would cook for people thinking they were going in the book. And after making them and kind of seeing the reactions and my own reaction, I was like, this is not good. It's not good.
Name a couple.
There were a few fish dishes that I really struggled with.
We're going to get to the fish.
My boyfriend loves almost everything I've ever made. And there was one thing I made and he didn't really eat any of it. And I thought to myself, I really blew it.
What was it?
I forget. I blocked it from my memory. I don't like to acknowledge my failures. No, it was some sort of, I wanted to make like a sheet pan fish situation where it's just.
All fish?
Yeah. No, fillets. Mm-hmm. And they're just not that good that way most of the time. And I tried it a few different ways.
You don't get that like that crispy pan situation.
Yeah, it's not. It's neither soft and tender nor crispy and delicious. It was sort of.
All right, so I have a lot of thoughts on the book. I want to get to them.
I want to hear them all.
You see all my little stickies? Yes, I got a lot of little post-its.
Yeah, for those of you at home, Adam has the book in his lap with many post-it notes.
But before we get to the book, let's rewind a bit if we can. Yeah. Like, so how did you get to this point where you're all of a sudden someone who can write a cookbook and have a name for yourself and like be a, if you're talking to someone on the airplane, they, what do you even say right now?
You know what? I basically jumble my words and sort of say too much and not enough. And they're like, wait, so what do you do? I'm like, well, I'm a food writer, but I develop recipes, but I also wrote a cookbook and I just do general food stuff. And they're like, what does that even mean? They're like, you're a caterer? I'm like, no, let me start over. Because I feel like now it's a lot more common to ask somebody, what do you do? And to have them have not a traditional answer.
Yes, not a 9-to-5 answer.
Right. You know, they do a little bit of this, they do a little bit of that. And most people get to have the luxury of saying something like, I'm a creative person or I'm a creative period. Or
is there anything worse than that phrase?
I'm a creative. So I think I'm going to go with food creative. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. I would never say that. I generally say food writer or recipe developer.
Yeah.
But recipe developer sounds so boring. And when I think of food writer, I think of like a real writer who writes about food, and I don't put myself really in that camp. So,
but you are, if I may say, you are a good writer.
Oh, thank
for
you.
Someone who cooks first and is probably a cook first, mm-hmm. like you're someone who is able to put into words well what it is you're doing in the kitchen.
Thank you.
So that was the start of your cooking career. So where were you at school?
In Santa Cruz.
Okay, at UC?
Cabrillo, and then Santa Monica College, and then I took a class at Santa Cruz. But
so at some point you said college is fun and all, but I want to be cook.
Yeah. I mean, it's like everything. It's a long story, but basically I had this older boyfriend and he was really into cooking and food, and he was a creative, if you will, but he was really into food, and we would spend all of our money going to this one restaurant in LA. And
what restaurant?
It was called Sona, which has since closed, but it was a great restaurant and lots of, you know, like the whole James Beard Award and Best New Chef and lots of press, and they did really well. And then it kind of fell apart.
That'll happen in the restaurant business.
yeah. Again, another long story. But so I went and I just thought about it and realized that I saw people around me in college being really excited to be there and realized that I wasn't. And it was partly socially and partly I just couldn't feel anything for it. And in order to really go put myself into it, I really felt like I needed to be emotionally invested, and I wasn't. But I was emotionally invested in cooking and food, and so I went and I did the research and thought, okay, I'll go to culinary school, but I'm going to go talk to this chef at this restaurant that I like and ask their opinion. And he didn't have any time for me, but I did get to talk to the pastry chef who said, that's great. Why don't you not go to culinary school? He said, why don't you come and work for me, and I will pay you to cut marshmallows or do whatever it is that I need you to do because we need help right now. At our bakery. And if you like it enough, you can go to culinary school because so many people spend the money. At the time, I think it was 40 or 45 grand for like a 9-month course. And they do all the work and then they graduate and they can't find a job. They find out they don't like working in a restaurant anyway. And then they're kind of, you know, effed, if you will. And so I said, okay, so I'll try that. And I told my parents I was moving back from Santa Cruz and I was moving back to LA and I was going to go work in this restaurant. And as I say in the introduction of the book, my mom, I think, literally burst into tears and told me I was going to work at Hot Dog on a Stick. She's like, that's what you're going to do with your life? And like, no, mom, that's not what I'm going to do with my life. Because at the time, also being a cook was not cool. There was a Food Network, but it was for moms.
Yeah.
And being into food wasn't that interesting. It was for people that could afford it and which generally meant somebody older. It wasn't a cool thing that anyone really knew about. And now you have like,
we love the word cool, but it's also, it wasn't in that sense of like, oh no, you can have a dynamic career that can lead to many different opportunities by getting into the food world.
Right. But even now, I think if you hear, oh, someone's a pastry cook or someone's a cook at this great restaurant, it's cool, right? You think, oh, that's a cool job.
Something
they're a
to
cool person.
Something to aspire to.
They have tattoos. They're interesting. They're an artistic, thoughtful person. And I think before I used to think, oh, you're a cook. Like there was a different stigma, a different relationship to people that had that job.
So first day of work, did you love it or were you like, oh my God, what am I doing?
I loved it and I cried. And then I cried every day for at least a few weeks. The restaurant was in walking distance to my new apartment in West Hollywood. And I remember just leaving every day around 4:30 just in tears because I sucked. I was not good at my job. I messed up every day. And it was kind of like.
So why'd you keep coming back?
Because I loved it. I loved it so much. And I also hated the fact that I wasn't good at it yet. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be. I wanted to be better than anyone there. And I was the worst person there. So I knew I had a lot of work to do, but I also knew I could be good at it. It didn't seem unattainable.
What was, do you remember that one day where you're like, oh, wait, I can do this?
Probably the first day I didn't mess up.
do you remember what that day was? Or did you cook a particular dish or dessert that you sort
Well, of there was a particular day that somebody taught me how to make ice cream, like taught me what to look for when making like a creme anglaise. And it was someone that had always been very mean to me because I was messing up so much and I was making their work harder because they would have to.
Kitchen, if you're screwing up, someone's got to cover you.
Taking care of me. I was also younger by everybody by about 10 years. And
makes their job harder. Yeah,
people did not have time for my shit. Yeah. And, I remember they took the time to kind of show me how to make ice cream, and I thought, wow, I must be okay, or I must be worth being invested in. And to have somebody kind of take you under their wing and teach you how to do something is a real boost for your morale, to think somebody believes in me enough to spend the time to teach me rather than just say, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, I would say one big thing about sort of being a manager of employees and stuff, like, I mean, such an important ingredient is, does this person really want to be here? Mm-hmm. Are they really willing to learn?
Yeah.
And are they psyched to walk in the door every day? And if they are, you at least feel like, all right, I can teach.
Right. And I did. And regardless of whether at first I was good or not, I read every cookbook I could get my hands on. I showed up early to go to the farmer's market, carry groceries back. I stayed late to help clean, to like work off the clock, to do other things. I was very much in it to win it. And I think that they could tell.
So you were at Sona for how long?
I was there for almost 2 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then when did you move to New York?
Well, I moved to San Francisco after that. And I was there for almost 4 years. So I moved to New York almost 9 years ago. February will be 9 years, which basically means 10 years, which basically means I'm a New Yorker.
Did you work at restaurants in New York?
I worked at Momofuku. Okay. I worked at Milk Bar.
Okay. And then you came to BA in what year was that?
That was 2000 and, oh,
ish, 12,
11, 12?
12, somewhere around there. Okay. So you're at this point now where you go solo, get your solo career going. Yeah. Let's talk. So Dining In, this is a book. This book feels very Allison. If you know Allison, you look at it, you're like, oh, it's cool. But like I said, it's a little loose, but not too loose. And it's like something to sort of like, I want to make that, but it's like, oh, I can also, that doesn't look too hard to make. I can do this.
Yeah.
Talk about the sort of the inspiration for the book and what the sort of the general philosophy behind it is.
Well, that was sort of the hardest part, is thinking, what is the book? I knew I was going to do a book. I knew someone wanted me to do a book. I was really lucky. My editor, who's the vice president at Clarkson Potter, approached me and said, I love your recipes. Let's do a book. And I was like, but I don't have an idea for a book. She's like, it doesn't matter. Your recipes are great. You can do a book. So I spent a lot of time agonizing over like what it was going to be, if there was a hook, if there was a thing. And I just felt like that was really pigeonholing me. And that's not me anyway. I'm kind of all over the place, which is great. But so I really wanted it to be, I wanted to create a book of recipes that people were actually going to use. I wanted to create a book that people were going to reference, to cook from, to look at a recipe and be like, oh, I don't have eggplant, but I like the walnuts that go with the eggplant. I'm going to make that instead and do it with green beans because she says I can. And kind of adapt it and make it their own and feel like you said, this isn't, I don't need 20 ingredients. I don't need 4 hours. I don't need like a beautiful barn house that I, you know. Is like,
but how awesome would it be if you had
if
a
anyone has a
barn
house that I could use?
Hi, Ina.
But yeah, I wanted people to look at it and feel like, oh, this feels contemporary, but it also feels attainable.
Yeah. What I like about it, so it's called Dining In, highly cookable recipes. Mm-hmm. It's cool because it's like, it kind of suggests entertaining, but it doesn't necessarily say entertaining. Like this could be for two people, or if you want to have friends over. We did a piece in Bon Appetit in October with you called...
It's not entertaining. It's having people over.
But that's true, though. It's like, you don't have to plan a menu and you don't need to set the table. It's like you can just spend time with your friends. And you write about that in the intro, which I really like talking about. Yes, you love going out to dinner and you love going to this amazing ramen place or bone marrow on toast. But like, there's something about dining in and just buy it with your boyfriend, with your parents, with your friends.
Yeah.
I went to a friend's house for dinner on Friday night and I got there and after like a, I hate to say like trip, like after a long week at work, but it was just like, it was so nice to like just get to a friend's house and take your shoes off and just hang out in the kitchen and have a drink. And like, I'm so glad, I was so like, so glad not to be in a restaurant right now and waiting to be seated and the whole party's not there. And then do I really want to order a glass of wine for $17?
No, the answer is no.
Yeah. The answer is never. And it's just like, there is something about just being in someone's house.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, you know, I think so often we think of, okay, you can have a really great, amazing meal at your favorite restaurant, or you can order seamless and or, you know, cook brown rice with vegetables for dinner. Like, there's no, people don't think of it often as having the same kind of experience at a restaurant that you can actually have at home without having a restaurant background, without having access to the equipment and the ingredients and the sourcing. And it can be as fun and elevated and elegant and, you know, easy.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some specific dishes. Kind of break it up into vegetables and salads, and you got grains and pasta and meat and fish. Mm-hmm. All right, so there's a shot here by our friends Graydon and Harriet, great photographer duo.
Amazing.
Turmeric roasted carrots with seeds and labneh. And basically, it's just like a sheet tray of really pretty carrots from the green market, some purple and orangey and darker orange, and a bunch of seeds on there. And it's like, I just remember like at Bon Appetit sometimes, you're like, sometimes you would look at a recipe and you're like, well, is that enough? I mean, is it clever enough? Is it different enough? But it's like, sometimes it's like, you look at that and people would say, oh, I can make that. And that's like, well, that's kind of the point.
Right.
It's like, you want people to make it. You don't want people to look at a recipe and be like, oh my God.
Right.
That looks amazing, but there's no way I'm going to make it.
Yeah. I think oftentimes as a cook or a chef or whatever you want to call it, you have this thing inside of you that says, I want people to know how creative I am. I want people to know that I'm really thoughtful and I'm really pushing it. And is that enough? And we could take it to the next level, and this isn't boring, and you've never seen this before, but that's almost never what people are going to make. And I think that
it looks beautiful on a magazine page.
Cool. Yeah, it's cool. Don't get me wrong.
But are you going to cook it?
Are you going to make it? Yeah. And I think that we also, living in New York, working in a magazine, you take for granted how many people don't know certain things. And you take for granted that, oh, everyone's already heard of labneh. Everyone already knows that you should roast your vegetables.
But also, even if it's easy, like first, the carrots, like, so I have some good friends who have a garden at their weekend house, but they don't really cook much. It's a long story. But anyway, so.
Is it Ina Garten?
It could be. Okay. It's like, we were over there one time and I'm like, oh, what do they have in the garden? And they had a bunch of these beautiful little carrots and I'm pulling them out of the ground. And you're like, this is amazing. Like, beautiful baby carrots sort of thing. And
yeah, back to the land.
And they're cooking. They're like, what are you going to do with those? And I'm like, I'm just going to roast them. I'm like, we don't have time. And I'm like, it's fine. So I cleaned them, split them in like kind of lengthwise, threw them on a sheet tray with some oil, roasted them, put some sort of seasoning on them. And they're like, oh my God, these are amazing. Yeah. How did you do that? Like, email me. Can you explain
was
to me?
Was it you, Adam, or was it the carrots from the ground?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, yes, I put some carrots on a sheet tray in the oven with them olive oil and salt.
Right.
And like, to them, that was like mind-blowing. And it was delicious. They're like, you don't always have to do a lot.
Yeah.
But it's like taking that step. And how do those carrots go with everything else on the table?
I think almost any dish in this book could be sort of tweaked one notch above or below, you know, oh, I could have added grated ginger to the lemon tart. I could have added this to that. I could have.
Let me ask you a question. Emma here, our producer,
Emma
Wartzman, she had a good question in terms of when you cook something, when you create these dishes, how much do you expect the reader to cook the dishes as is, or how much do you hope that they riff on the dishes and sort of go their own way?
Well, in the head note.
That was a Fleetwood Mac reference, right?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh,
did
your
you know
own
I'm
way.
A huge fan.
I did.
I think that I try to be as instructive as possible in the recipe and, you know, with sidebars and kind of in the recipe or in the head note kind of saying, feel free to not make this with the recommended dressing, or feel free to take this dressing and use it on a million other things like XX or X. But I think that my hope is that you do riff and you do make it your own and you kind of find inspiration in the whole vibe of the book and the aesthetic and the voice that inspires you to kind of do your own thing with it. I don't think that anyone should only cook to the letter of the law in any recipe. I think that recipes should be used mostly for inspiration. Also, like, you know, if you're the kind of person that really loves to just cook from a recipe, this book will also be great for you because the recipes work.
Yeah.
And you should be able to have great success with them. But if you're thinking, oh, so I'm doing a collaborative dinner with Tusk Restaurant in Portland in a few weeks. And, you know, sort of, I gave them the book and they looked it over and the chef, Sam, he said, okay, great. Like, let's do this dish and this dish. And for this dish, let's do the preserved lemon labneh with the beets and let's do this with that. And I've got this hummus sauce that would go great with that. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see somebody look at the book and say, okay, we're going to put a different spin on each thing.
Yeah, but, or seasonally, like that summer, that recipe that is very summer centric, I love, but what if we take a fall vegetable and sub it in?
Yeah. But the spirit is the same. And I think that's the most important part.
Speaking of labneh and nowness of recipes, all right, your very first recipe in the book, vinegar roasted beet with spring onions and yogurt. Now you have like a veritable like mattress of swooshy yogurt with some roasted beets and sort of spring onion, shallot-y sort of things and herbs. Let's talk about yogurt.
I could talk about yogurt all day, Adam. I'm so glad you asked.
But what? 10 years ago, no one was eating yogurt on a plate with vegetables. At least in this country, people were.
No, in this country, it was not a thing.
And now it is like,
but mostly because you know why? Because the yogurt you could get was Yoplait and it was flavored with strawberries.
Yes.
And I've almost never, if you did see plain yogurt, it was for diet foods or smoothies and it was runny.
Low fat.
Low fat, yeah. Or it had vanilla in it for some god-awful reason, but you couldn't find just delicious, thick, creamy yogurt. It was like you had sour cream and you had strawberry yogurt, and that was kind of it. I mean, I was, you know, eight, but I'm imagining 25 years ago that that was sort of the norm. And now you go to the Whole Foods, or even my bodega has four different types of full-fat Greek yogurt.
Yeah.
With different thicknesses and acidities and flavors. And, you know, that to me is really cool.
Fascinating how sort of on point the people are who stock.
Oh my God.
The corner
it's a real
delis in New York
respond,
City.
You know? It's like,
but they know exactly what to get.
It's like being in a wedding and having one of those DJs that will take every request. I have my bodega. If I ask
like,
them to stock
shit,
something,
I need some sumac. And they're like, oh, we have sumac at the corner deli.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Insane.
I know.
I'm kind of bummed that you have this cool sidebar called I Love Boiled Potatoes. And then next to it, you have a recipe called Crispy Smashed Potatoes with Fried Onions and Parsley. But there's no photograph.
I know. You know what? It's probably my biggest regret of the whole book. And it's because I didn't think that it was going to be that interesting in the grand scheme of things. And then I did these videos that are coming out soon for like, I did a few recipes from the book. It's kind of like a trailer. And I made the crispy smashed potatoes with the onions as a sort of, you know, apology for not including them in the book because they look so crazy delicious. So I think for my second book, I'm going to have to do a version of them and kind of reference the book one as saying apologies.
Allison, we all make mistakes.
I know. It's hard.
It's like if you go to the that new/old restaurant in New York, The Grill, which is where the Four Seasons restaurant used to be. And it's sort of the most elegant, grand, glamorous restaurant in New York City right now. But what I love about that, if you get like the prime rib on the side, they just have boiled potatoes with some fresh herbs and butter. And it's just like perfect and simple.
Yeah.
And you're like,
boiled potatoes are great.
And you can,
2018, the year of the boiled potato.
And as you point out, you can have them. You can put them in a salad niçoise. You can smash them and fry them so they get all crispy. And that's a great
technique. I feel like it's actually a very Adam thing to do is put boiled potatoes in your fridge because you do like versatility.
Full confession.
Disclosure.
Full whatever. Yeah. I'm terrible with the fridge. Like I don't cook. Like I don't.
Like you don't put stuff in it or you forget when you do?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah, like I roasted a chicken on Sunday and now it's sitting in there, but I'm going out. I have a thing tonight, tomorrow night, and the next night. Mm. And I'm going to be home the next three nights after that. But then you have a five-day-old half a chicken.
Who makes that? Yeah. I hear you.
All right. So I got a bunch of other things. Apple and endive salad with parsley and salted almonds.
Mm.
What I love, I'm big into this. Just like crushed toasted nuts on everything.
Put it on everything.
I mean, from pastas to salads to grain salads. Why not?
Yeah. Well, So when writing the book, another thing that you have to think of, which I think is something that you think about a lot when you're in a magazine, but if it were up to me, everything would have yogurt and crushed nuts on it. Like just every dish is good with one of those two things. And you have to kind of pull yourself back and say, okay, there's a time and a place. And if someone picks up this book and they're like, wow, this girl's really all about one thing and I get it and I don't need to buy this book. You kind of need to leave a little bit of mystery. So I couldn't put toasted nuts on everything and I couldn't put yogurt or labneh on everything. So every time it is in the book, it really counts.
I'm gonna call you out on something.
Okay.
All right.
I can't wait. I love this
part. I know. Okay. Did you food style the book yourself?
I did.
Okay. You did a great job.
Thank you. But I messed up somewhere.
No, it's just like, this is something like I said. This is something we deal with at Bon Appetit also. Like you want the food to be beautiful, but you also want it to look like real. Like I just made this and you can make it.
I did just make it.
Yeah, but you did not dress these salads.
Yeah, I did.
No, there's no dressing there. You put the leaves in. You could tell.
Well, the parsley may not be dressed, but
where is it? Are you sure? Yeah. I know we're looking. I don't know. There's like certain ones you can tell. Like look at the next page. Look at the next page with the... you got some like blue cheese and...
Well, the blue cheese isn't dressed here. If you read the recipe, Adam,
Want me to read the recipe?
Yeah, we're going to do dramatic reading.
I just look at the picture.
Prairie Home Companion here. You scatter the stuff and then you drizzle it with vinegar and olive oil so there's no tossing. And then you finish with the pecans and the cheese. So the pecans and the cheese never get dressed. You're just literally seasoning the fruit.
Calling me out. I learned that I did that piece, a little salad piece, last couple months ago.
Oh, change the subject.
I'm agreeing with you with Ignacio Matos, the chef over at Estella and Ultra Paradisa and Floor Bar. about sort of like the more of the drizzle, the dressing over the various components of the salad mm-hmm. and what each of those components is, as opposed to just tossing all together in a bowl.
Right.
And sometimes that's great for, you know, maybe a whatever sort of greens with like a little gem with, you know, seven goddess, green goddess or whatever. But sometimes, yeah, you just do the drizzle.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that because especially with those fruit salads, a lot of those, almost none of them are tossed in a bowl.
Okay. Can I be narcissistic here for a minute? Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like half this book, you're just like, I'm going to do these recipes because Adam never would have let me done these recipes at Bon Appetit.
Yeah, it was like I had your picture in my kitchen and every recipe I thought of, I thought, would Adam have approved? If not, it's definitely going in the book.
Well, you had the book. Where's your little note about
what
fish?
What do you mean you would have never let me?
Well, no, because you have a lot of like.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Like the sardines never, ever would have gone in the book. But also, I'm a late adopter of the sardine movement, and I think that it's worth talking about because I think people might be into them.
Well, you're right. If my years in the editorial world taught me anything, it's that for many people, fish, for whatever reason, is a hard sell.
That was a personal dig, yes, at you.
No.
I meant it's a hard sell for most people, and you're right. It's like when we were thinking about the cover of the book, we're like, well, fish is out because no one buys a cover with fish on it. Unless it's a fish book, but.
All right, let's talk about this because it's interesting because people will order fish when they're out.
Oh, whether boy, it's, do what, people love salmon. Yeah, what, I mean, oh, man,
they'll order
man.
Salmon. They'll go to like the Nobu-type restaurants. Mm-hmm. They'll go to the seafood places on the coast or whatever. But mm-hmm. yet, what is it about cooking fish at home that people are intimidated by?
Well, it's generally not as delicious as or easy as like cooking chicken. And I mm-hmm. think that's because most of the fish people have access to isn't great. Whereas a chicken breast from a great chicken and a chicken breast from an okay chicken, if you do certain things to it, will be generally good, right?
Enough salt, some butter.
Yeah, you know, it'll be good. But the difference between not good fish and great fish is oceans apart.
Ooh, I like that one.
Do you see what?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
They're so two different beasts at that point that, you know, if I can't find good fish, I'm not making fish.
So let's say you want seafood, but you can't get a great piece of fish. What sort of recipes would you sort of advise in this book? You know, like, hey, you don't have an awesome fish market. Is it buying clams? Is it shrimp?
Yeah.
Is it like, what are some of those other seafood options?
Shrimp can be tricky. Mm-hmm. That is a case by case basis for me. I think most, really not none of it. And not even salmon. Because to me, salmon, especially like if you really, that's a type of fish where you're really tasting where the salmon has been. Whereas like a trout to me, I grew up eating a lot of trout and we would get it at Ralph's, which does Ralph's exist anymore? Does anyone know?
In that? LA?
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. And it wasn't a great fish market, but it was pretty good. And when you put a bunch of garlicky breadcrumbs on it and broil it, it's delicious. Mm. But salmon, even if you're doing certain things to it, you can kind of always tell if it wasn't swimming in good water. You're like, it tastes a little like murky or.
I will say, let's talk about one particular salmon recipe. We still in story idea meetings at Bon Appetit. I think one of the most referenced recipes is still your slow-cooked salmon recipe. Can you walk us through that one?
I can. And I wrestled a lot with whether I should put it in the book or not because obviously it's been published and people already
good.
Like it. But yeah, but I so I say this has been published in Bon Appetit before. I kind of made it a little different. And
still your recipe.
Yeah, exactly. So basically you take a very large piece of salmon. It can be 1.5 to 2.5. I've done it with a 3-pound fillet before.
Do you have thoughts about sourcing the salmon? Are there particular types you like more than others? Does it have to be wild?
I like wild salmon. Mm-hmm. This is a different story, but I was fortunate enough to visit a farm in Norway where they farm salmon, and it was some of the best salmon I've ever had. It was delicious, and I don't think as a whole farm salmon is bad. This was a very well-run fishery in pristine water, and they took really good care of the fish. And I saw where they were swimming, and they had a lot of space. It was beautiful.
I would also say
most farm salmon is like that. So,
but I would just say when buying, you know, everything from fish, and the same thing with steak, there's also the eye test. Like you can see in the does it look good or is it kind of pale and soft
I've seen
and
wild
mushy.
Salmon that looks ripped up and kind of dull and not delicious.
Trust your instincts when you're buying seafood.
Yeah, but also seafood's hard. We're we're overfishing and it's a lot to consider
absolutely.
When you're buying fish. So anyway, you take a piece of fish,
salmon.
It also works with halibut and cod very nicely. And you cover it with a ton of olive oil. And from there, you can add fresh chilies. You can add, in the book, it's just fresh citrus. I used a mix of Meyer lemons and blood oranges and satsumas, I think. And I was in California at the time that we shot that. So it was just citrus everywhere. It was amazing.
Citrus for days.
Yeah. And you slow roast it at what, 300?
They're saying
slow They're roast. Saying, this, I say.
Allison Roman says preheat the oven to 300 degrees and let it cook the salmon until it is just turning opaque around the edges and is nearly cooked through about 20 to 25 minutes. Then toss the herbs with the lemon juice and flaky sea salt and serve with your perfect salmon. So you have like a sort of a herb salad.
Yeah. And that's really all you need. And in the original Bon Appetit recipe, there's fennel and chilies and blood oranges, I believe. And you could certainly do any of that with this.
Was the fennel in the original recipe, was the fennel cooked or was that sort of raw?
It was cooked in with the dish. Yeah, it was sort of a one pot dish.
And I think one thing that I like with these, and we riffed another time on it, but you can also just sort of pull apart the salmon, almost torn, that it doesn't have to be sliced perfectly.
Yeah, I don't like things that are cubed or sliced or portioned perfectly, which is also why cooking salmon in fillets is hard for me. And a reason I do like serving salmon this way, because you can kind of just take a spoon and it's really tender and you can just take a little piece. It looks really natural and kind of rugged. Salmon.
Let's talk about, we have this great book, all these recipes, whether for two or for 10. I still think entertaining is different than cooking. And for a lot of people, when you're entertaining, all of a sudden the pressure gets ratcheted up. You feel like, oh my God, it's got to be perfect. And these friends coming over and so-and-so is a food writer. And if it's not good, like they're not going to ever come back to again. And, you know, it's so what are some of your techniques or advice for the average home cook and how can they entertain better or more easily?
Probably to relax a little bit and make sure the people that you're inviting over are not, I mean, unless it's like somebody important that you have to invite over on behalf of someone else or something like that. I try to keep my house a very safe space where I'm not inviting anyone over that makes me feel like I could feel bad about what I'm going to cook, whether or not it comes out well or not, or judge me on it. I try to only invite people that I know will appreciate what I'm doing. But also, you know, I don't want to feel self-conscious when I'm cooking. I don't want to feel tense or stressed out. It should be an enjoyable, relaxing experience. And making sure that you have, to me, the most important part of entertaining is making sure the people that are there we'll get along without you and we'll have a lively enough conversation without you, can kind of carry on. I love to host, but I don't love to be the host.
Like matchmaker. And, yeah. Hey, like, have you met so-and-so? You guys both have kids who go to whatever
and then
school.
I want to exit and cook in the thing and in my kitchen alone. But I like to get people together and I love it when I can hear them having a really good time without me. And then I'll be like, wait, are they having fun without me? And then get, you know, FOMO and go in the other room. But I feel like that's the most important part. If you have a group of people that can't speak to each other and then you stress out because you're like, fuck, I got to finish this chicken and they can't carry on a conversation without me. And this is really stressful.
But there's nothing worse than to be the person who has to fill in the gaps.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, oh, no one's talking at the table. So speaking of the table, do you set the table before friends come over?
No. Well, I also have a small apartment. And so I can fit six sort of comfortably at my table. Any more than that, I put all the plates out, I put all the forks out, I put all the food out on the table, and people take a plate, and then they make their own plates, sit on the couch, sit on a chair, sit on a pillow.
We're hanging out here at the Sono Studio. I always believe that music is a crucial part of any dinner
party.
The most
crucial part.
Next to the wine.
Yeah.
You a playlist gal? Do you sort of like mix and match? Are you like changing stuff or what's your
policy? I'm a mix and match. I sort of, there are very few albums that I feel like I could play start to finish and feel comfortable with.
Yep.
But I'm also, I sort of use Spotify as a real crutch.
Like playlist style or so and so. You know what I do sometimes? I'll do like, so I'm like a big Steve Earle fan.
My dad also. Oh, that's not an age dig.
Okay. It is.
No, it's not.
I don't know. Well, that's a whole other sidebar we get into. Okay. But Marlon, my son now, he refers to like Steve. So I sometimes do Steve Earle Radio.
Right,
so you get all these different songs in that genre. And he's always like, Dad, can you please turn off the barn music?
Yeah. Oh, man. My dad used to play a lot of NPR. I grew up in Los Angeles. We had KCRW, a great radio station. And he would play KCRW. And boy, did I complain. It was just the worst thing that ever happened to me. And then he would put Bob Dylan on, and it was like, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. And then I turned 16. I was like, Bob Dylan's pretty cool, Dad. He's like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. I think one thing with music, so I like to just have that. If you're one of those persons that happens to have vinyl. It's cool where guests can kind of get up and pick a record and flip it over and whatnot. I think that's a lot of fun.
If you trust them. Because I've definitely damaged a record player before at someone's house doing that.
But I think volume is also really important. Like you want it loud enough that it sort of fills the gaps in the conversation, but you don't want it that loud that it feels like a house party.
No, and you have to kind of read the room, right? And I'll start with a certain vibe, you know, when people are coming in.
Yes.
And then towards the end of the meal, after we've eaten, if there's dessert or, you know, Amaro's or whatever, then you kind of switch the playlist, you turn it up a little bit. You kind of, it's a living, breathing thing, a party or having people over anyway. You have to adjust and you can't expect that one vibe is going to work through the whole evening because things definitely change. Hopefully they do.
Well, it's also interesting because like sometimes the party stays around the table. Sometimes a party will migrate to the living room, you know, like parties are sort of fluid or they should be. Yeah. I think. What about, all right, dessert. Is there always a dessert sometimes?
There's almost never a dessert.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're kind of a dessert person, aren't you?
I thought you were the dessert person, Adam.
No, I'm not the dessert person.
Okay, well,
I will say
we'll
this.
We'll get there later.
But... Wait, can I have full disclosure? Yeah. Full disclosure again, whatever that word is, phrase is. So last night, I did not mix myself a cocktail when I got home. I was like, I felt pretty good about myself for not pouring myself a drink. But then around 8:30, I'm like, well, I'm going to go to the corner deli and get me a 4-pack of Nutter Butters.
Yeah.
I didn't have a drink tonight and I deserve a little something.
Opposite of not drinking.
Yeah.
I'm a pint of ice cream person on my everyday.
You have a pint of ice cream every day?
No. My boyfriend does pretty much. So we go through a pint like every 2 days.
Can we talk ice cream? What are some of Benji's favorite like flavors or brands?
He's pretty easygoing, but I sort of draw the line at flavors where I am an exclusive mint and chip fan. And I don't care what the brand is, but it has to be mint and chip.
Well, can we talk McConnell's mint chip? Have you had McConnell's?
I don't know.
They're the ones from Santa Barbara or Santa Monica?
Oh, yeah.
Santa Barbara. Yeah.
I basically phenomenal. Get what I can get at the bodega.
Try that one again.
Ben
Very
Jerry's.
Pale green, but the little flecks of chips sprayed throughout.
Yeah. I think that if you are lucky enough to ever have sampled a Thrifty's ice cream, now I think they Rite Aid bought them out. But okay. Thrifty's, if you Southern California thing. Their mint and chip to me is the platonic ideal. Baskin Robbins also extremely
I don't think it's mint and chip. It's just mint chip.
It's mint and chip.
No, it's
mint
not.
Mint and chip.
It's either mint chocolate chip or just mint chip. It's not mint and chip.
We're going to need another Google on that.
Yeah, we're going to Google that. Well, listen, Baskin Robbins is like, that's the original.
It's just the best.
The OG.
And I know that I'm supposed to care more about like artisanally made small batch ice cream.
And
but
how did it get
Baskin
that green?
Robbins is just the best. No. And I don't think you can top it.
No, I would not. Do you ever do that? Do you ever like just get a bunch of pints of ice cream, put them out and let people sort of serve themselves or sometimes you make homemade cookies and let them do the ice cream cookie thing? No?
No, because then the ice cream melts and then you got to, you know, I've done it occasionally. I made brownies before and stuff like that.
Ooh, and you just put a little scoop on top?
I just put the ice cream out and people can scoop
themselves.
If they
want to. Yeah. I like
but
that.
I'm also a big fan of like Pockies and weird wafer cookies.
Oh, little Pocky Six?
Yeah. Because I do end up testing a lot of dessert recipes. I have dessert sort of by default.
Okay.
Pie is probably my favorite dessert if I'm going to make it, but I'll only make pie if I'm going to someone's house, and that's what I'm bringing. I won't make pie if you're coming over to my house.
Oh, interesting.
So if you want a pie from me, invite me over. Don't come over.
Yeah. All right. Okay, wait, before we get to our lightning round, what about you finish this book? It comes out now. I imagine the moment you finish your first book, you're already thinking about the second book.
Yes.
That's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure. Yeah. So I go on a little book tour on the West Coast, which is about 3 weeks, and then I'll come back. It's the holidays. Then I'm going to do some East Coast dates in January. East Coast dates, like I'm a band or something. I don't know.
Did you make a t-shirt yet?
I didn't. I made a tote, though. They're real cute. And then immediately start sort of working on book two and conceptualizing and figuring out what it is and where I'm going to shoot it and who's going to shoot it. And just kind of all of that stuff. But I put a lot of pressure on myself to think about that before, like a few months ago, and I realized I have to get through this process before I can really start to think about the next one, much to my publisher's chagrin, I'm sure.
Damn publishers. All right, lightning round. Are you ready?
Yes.
Either or questions.
Okay.
Got to answer them.
Great.
You can meander if you want, but or expound, I should say. You can expound on an answer if you'd like.
Okay.
Cast iron or sheet pan?
Cast iron.
A size preference?
I use a 10-inch pretty much for everything. 12 is a little too big. 10-inch, you can fit a chicken in.
I did a 10-inch and a roast chicken and a 10-inch every day.
And the 10-inch also you can fry 4 eggs in, which is important.
jumpsuit or high-waisted jeans?
Oh, my God. Both.
You can only get one.
High-waisted jeans. More versatile.
Shotter or beer?
Beer.
You have any fit? Well, I know you have a lot of Modelo in the book.
I like Modelo.
That's very Alex, very Alex Grossman of you, our former creative director.
Well, I do everything for you guys. So I was hoping to get some of that Modelo money, but they didn't. No, I'm just kidding. It was not sponsored. Did not get any money for that. I just really like cheap, shitty beer.
Yeah.
As long just as, like as you. Long I know as, that we agree on that.
Okay. As long as it's cold.
I like the label also.
Roast chicken or slow roasted pork?
Roast chicken. Always.
Always. Always and forever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a preferred technique or will you sort of play with different versions?
I'll play with a lot of different versions. I like hot and fast. I like low and slow. I like spiced. I like salt and pepper. I like lemon under the skin. I like buttermilk brined. I like spatchcocked. I like, the only thing I won't ever do, I won't ever truss a chicken.
You know, I was talking with Emil Stoniker, one of our editors the other day about that. And like, I'm like, is it? Do you really need to, you know? And like the return on investment, is it worth it? Also, like that whole thing where you're supposed to wiggle the legs to see if the chicken's done, you can't do that if it's trussed.
No, I think that's Martha's fault that we all truss our chickens. I don't think it's really necessary.
France or Italy?
Italy.
All right. Like that.
Yeah.
Hamburger or hot dog?
Hot dog. Always hot dog. I could eat so many hot. This summer I ate so many hot dogs. It was crazy. I recently have started liking cheeseburgers though, but only the...
Okay,
Smash Burger.
Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
So your nickname at BA was Hamburger Roman.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, by Andrew Nolte. At the time, you claimed you didn't like cheeseburgers. I don't understand. Like, who doesn't like hamburgers?
So at the time, it was a lot of those restaurant style burgers where you have like thick patty with Gruyere and bacon and a brioche bun and
onion jam.
You gotta have the burger.
Like a Bordeaux onion jam.
Yeah, you don't gotta have the burger. I think those burgers are gross. They make me feel bad inside. I don't enjoy them. The bun is soggy. The meat is too much. It's just gross. But I do appreciate a very thin smash burger patty, In-N-Out style, Shake Shack style. You get the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Beatles or Stones?
Stones.
Right answer.
Kill me.
Beyonce or Solange?
Oh.
Oh.
Both.
You can't say both.
I can.
You get one. You get one, you get the keep.
I just saw Solange in concert. In concert. Wow. Again, I am feeling very
was that it? Where, was that Radio City or what
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it was amazing. She really is a true artist. Today I'm going to say Solange, right. But that doesn't mean anything bad about Beyonce, just know at home that I mean both.
Order in pizza or order in Chinese?
Pizza.
Pizza. Your top preferred toppings?
I'm a cheese person.
Just yeah.
I like cheese, maybe pepperoni.
Mm.
Any other topping, hard pass.
I'm with you on that one. Blonde or brunette?
Well, right now, blonde.
Sit at the bar or sit in a booth?
That is so largely dependent on the space. But I love eating alone at the bar, or if it's a small intimate restaurant, eating at the bar because the booths are too crowded.
There's nothing like having a good bartender and eating by yourself, and the bartender who's looking out for you is a great experience.
Get a little book.
Yeah.
You know, love it.
All right. Couple more. Lemons or radishes?
Lemons.
You use a lot of lemons.
So much. Yeah. It's my desert island ingredient. Like olive oil and salt, lemon, anything is good with those three things. I know that's a very obvious thing to say, but radishes run their course. I love a radish as much as the next person. I really do. They're not.
They can't influence a dish as many ways.
Yeah,
as a lemon
I don't
can.
Depend on them.
Yeah, whether you're roasting
if
lemon.
If I don't have a lemon for dinner, it ruins my night. Yeah,
like the juice, the zest, roasting, all sorts
the whole
of things.
Thing,
yeah.
I wrote a book on lemons.
You did, literally.
Yeah.
That was one of the short stack books.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Scrambled or fried?
Fried. Always.
Well, that leads to the final question. Butter or olive oil?
Olive oil.
With eggs and everything.
I go through so much olive oil, it is obscene. And butter to me is a real luxury item. And I only cook with butter when I feel like you can't use anything else. When I feel like it really makes or break the makes the dish, it has to really enhance it or it doesn't belong.
All right, Allison Roman, her new book, Dining In, is out now. Thanks so much, Allison.
Thanks, Adam.
Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Emma Wertzman and Carrie Polis and edited by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and LeGrady's, with additional music by Nathaniel Wertzman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.